This is Jonathan Booth speaking. The date is August 23, 1982. The place, Honolulu, Hawaii. The subject of this tape is historical data relevant to the city of Long Beach, California, and Signal Hill, California. Question one, could you tell me about when and why your family came to Long Beach? My father, Charles Francis Booth, and my mother, Emily Coy Booth, emigrated from Butte, Montana, to Southern California along about November or December of the year 1910. I was at that time about 9 or 10 months of age. The primary reason for this emigration was because of an iceberg, a shipwreck, and a hearty dislike of snow. My father was a mining engineer who was born in the small town of Sarnia, province of Ontario, Canada. When he was about 23 years of age, he went to Butte, Montana to seek his fortune, and over the years he did acquire a fair amount of worldly goods. However, in 1910, just about the time I was due to be born, my father had to go to Alaska on a mining expedition. And on that trip, which of course was by ship, his ship struck an iceberg at midnight one night and sank very, very rapidly. My father was able to save himself by diving into the icy water and swimming as hard as he could to where he could see a light on a shore. And he finally made shore and was rescued there. But in the meantime, my mother, who had accompanied my father from Butte to Seattle, Seattle, of course, was the jumping-off point for Alaska in those days, my mother, of course, was pregnant with me and was due to usher me into the world in about 3 months from the date my father left for Alaska. It was anticipated, of course, that my father would return in ample time to be present at my birth, but such was not the case. Because of the shipwreck, my father didn't get back to Seattle, and my mother, fearful that I would be born in strange and alien surroundings in Seattle, took the train to Portland, Oregon, where she had a cousin. There, I was born on March 5, 1910, on the third floor of a rooming house on East 21st Street. My father returned about a week after I was born and was reunited with his little family. Shortly thereafter, my mother and father decided that they had had enough of icebergs and snow and rain and bitterly cold winters, and decided to move to Southern California, where they had heard there was nothing but perpetual sunshine, orange blossoms, and the good life. My parents and I took the train from Montana and found ourselves eventually in Los Angeles, which was a new and exciting place for my parents. Before setting out from Butte, my parents decided that they would live only near the ocean. My father's reasoning being we might as well be in Split Lip, Wyoming, if we're going to live in California and can't see the ocean or gain any of the benefits of the Southern California climate and the beaches. So after about a week of getting used to Los Angeles, my father and mother took the big red trolley, the red cars of the Pacific Electric Railway, bundling me up, of course, and set out to explore the beach cities of Southern California. The first city they visited by the Pacific Electric red car was Santa Monica. And there they found, on that particular day, and of course it was wintertime, if you remember, they found cold weather, fog, drizzle, and disillusioned, they went back to Los Angeles. About a week later, they took the big red car again and went to the city of Redondo Beach. And they also explored the Hermosa Beach area and Manhattan Beach. Again, the same unfavorable climatic conditions prevailed. It was very, very windy. It was cold. And my father and mother looked at each other and said something to this effect, here we came down to Southern California to get away from the cold, and all we find is cold wind and fog and rain. So again, somewhat disillusioned, they took the red car back into Los Angeles. The next week, they took the big red car down to Long Beach. Now, Long Beach to them was nothing more than another spot on the map. However, on that particular day when they went to Long Beach, the sun was shining benignly, the ocean breezes were balmy, the sky was clear, and Catalina was visible on the horizon. It was a lovely city, they thought. Clean, well-kept, beautiful climate. So on the spot, my father decided Long Beach was going to be their city from now on. My father, of course, was retired from his profession as a mining engineer, but he had had some real estate experience in Butte, Montana, having been partners in a real estate firm there called Slemons and Booth. So the first few months my parents spent in Long Beach, he investigated the possibilities of buying property or forming a real estate office in Long Beach. My parents' first residence was around 5th Street and Magnolia, or perhaps Pacific Avenues. It was a three-story wooden white flat building, which bore the somewhat peculiar name of the Crow's Nest. Why, I don't know, and I don't think my parents ever knew why it was so dubbed. However, because of certain animal life, which they soon found infested the premises, my father and mother dubbed their new abode the Flea's Nest. Their next-door neighbors in the Flea's Nest were Mr. and Mrs. Ellsworth Hatch. Mr. Hatch later became a senior official with the Security Bank of Long Beach, and for many years, Ellsworth Hatch and Mrs. Hatch were among my parents' very best friends. In 1914, my grandmother, Adeline Eyre Booth, and my aunt, Mary Rachel Booth, known to all of us in the family as Aunt Molly, emigrated from Sarnia, Ontario, Canada, to Long Beach at the urging of my father, who had written them many glowing letters describing what a beautiful, clean city Long Beach was, the salubrious climate, and, of course, the possibility of making money in the burgeoning real estate business in Southern California. So, accordingly, my grandmother and my aunt soon appeared upon the scene, and with my father's help, my grandmother purchased two lots on the corner of Alboni Place and Ocean Boulevard. That is the northwest corner of that intersection. And also with my father's help, my grandmother built the first of two wooden flat buildings which now occupy the premises. And we moved into the lower left-hand apartment there with my grandmother and my aunt living above us. I think we moved into the Alboni and Ocean Boulevard flat buildings about 1915, when I was about 5 years of age. One of the most distinct recollections that I have of that period was in 1916, the entire area was heavily flooded because of incessant rains, and I can recall my father holding me in his arms and wading across Ocean Boulevard to the flat building there at Alboni during a particularly heavy downpour. The water flowing down Ocean Boulevard must have been some 9 inches to a foot deep. And the saying was in those days that it had rained so much that one could get in a rowboat at Alamitos Bay and row all the way around Signal Hill and come out at the harbor and never once touch land. My father did become active in real estate in Long Beach during the period 1910 to 1918, and did indeed start a real estate business. He also was the owner of the Pearl and Diamond store, which was located on Ocean Boulevard, about four stores west of Pine Avenue on the north side of Ocean Boulevard. He also owned the American Theater on the Pike, which was located just about a half a block east of Pine Avenue, where it where that is where Pine Avenue formed into Pine Avenue Pier. And I remember all the free motion pictures that I saw there when I was a boy, traipsing up and down the Pike, usually with my father or with my mother, going into theaters, because as a theater owner, my father never had to pay to go into any of the competitive theaters. They were all his friends anyway. So I spent a very happy childhood watching William S. Hart, Charlie Chaplin, and Fatty Arbuckle in their plays and comedies. As a matter of fact, Fatty Arbuckle lived just down the street from us on Ocean Boulevard, and I saw him several times when I was 6 and 7 years of age. Of course, I also saw many movie stars of that time, because the SNA studios on Alamitos were located just a few blocks from where I lived, and I watched a great many of the old-time pictures being made on the premises of the SNA studios, where I was an uninvited and frequently unwelcome guest. They took many pictures also of scenes involving railway trains, and since the steam trains came down Alamitos to Ocean Boulevard, only a block from my house, I was a spectator at many of the motion pictures shot involving trains in that area. There was also a branch line of that track which went over around Linden and Broadway, and that train, that spur track going over there, was utilized by the circus whenever it came to town, and the big circus tents were pitched around Broadway and Linden, and there was a round table there, or a roundhouse rather, where the locomotives would go in and be turned around, and then were hooked onto the train, and they steamed back to Los Angeles. In 1917, my father made two significant investments. One, he bought some property on the west side of Fifth Place and Ocean Boulevard, oceanfront property. And he erected two flat buildings on that property along Fifth Place, where my grandmother and my aunt moved shortly after the building's completion, about the end of 1917. Also in 1917, my father made his first purchase of property in the Signal Hill area. He purchased 2 acres in the saddle lying between Signal Hill proper and the smaller Reservoir Hill, where the city of Long Beach maintained its main drinking water reservoir. The property which he purchased there in the saddle was located on what is now the intersection of 19th Street and Redondo Avenue. Of course, 19th Street didn't exist in those days. There was a road which had been dedicated for street purposes running in front of my father's property, and my father, believing that the whole area, particularly the Reservoir Hill area, which was largely owned by the city of Long Beach, could become a park. So he named the street running in front of our two-acre parcel Park Lane. However, Park Lane did not exist very long, and about 10 years later, it was officially renamed 19th Street. At that time also, Redondo Avenue had not been extended from State Street, which was later to become Pacific Coast Highway, on over the hill. It didn't exist in that area, and there was a small lane which ran from State Street, Reed Pacific Coast Highway, to the front of our house, and that was called Enos. Well, my father also purchased a full block of 5 acres on 21st Street in Signal Hill, between 20th and 21st, and bounded on the east by Juan Aparo and on the west by Raymond Avenue. At the same time, he purchased 10 acres at what would be the intersection of Willow Street and Temple Avenue, and these 10 acres ran up the hill along Temple. On all of these properties, my father planted avocado and fruit trees. It was his ambition to become a gentleman farmer. And our home place at what is now 19th and Redondo was planted in many tropical fruits. Not only avocados, but such exotic tropical fruits as cherimoyas, hookerianas, sapotas, natal plums, feijoas, guavas, etc., along with the more mundane varieties of fruits, such as peaches, nectarines, plums, apricots, and so forth. About 10 days after the close of World War I, that is in November of 1918, we moved from my grandmother's flat buildings at Alboni and Ocean Boulevard to our new home in Signal Hill at the area which, as I've said, is now 19th and Redondo Avenue. Nothing at all remains of our old home place. Not a scrap, not a blade of grass, not a branch of a tree. It's all gone. To the best of my recollection, and I'm quite sure about this, my father bought none of the Signal Hill properties from the Alameda's Land Company. All three properties which he purchased were purchased from private individuals. In addition to these three properties, my father also had purchased and held for only a short time some land running from Obispo Avenue along 19th Street. And it was his idea, of course, to incorporate that into his avocado and fruit orchards. However, my mother soon found that she was rather lonely up there on Signal Hill. There were only about four other families around there. And she prevailed upon my father to sell some lots to friends of ours, or rather friends of hers, with the understanding that they would build houses on these lots and moved to Signal Hill, and accordingly my mother then would have the company of some of her old friends. And my father did sell several lots along 19th Street from Obispo Avenue East to friends of my mother. Well, he made it very easy for them to purchase the property. In fact, on two occasions he even loaned money to the purchasers. And in due course, two or three little homes were built there on the property my father had had owned for about 4 or 5 months. The irony of it is that those properties which my father sold were located right in the middle of the oil field, which was to be discovered in that area. And the friends of my mother's, that is my mother's friends that she wanted to live near her, promptly became wealthy from oil royalties and moved away from the entire area, leaving my folks again in 1923 and 24 practically by themselves up there in Signal Hill, surrounded by a forest of wooden oil derricks. All told, my father at one time owned approximately 19 acres in the Signal Hill area. He sold off about 2 acres in 1919 and 1920 to friends of his and my mother's, and sold off another 10 acres on the north slope of Signal Hill along the area which I've described, along Temple Avenue and bounded on the north by Willow Avenue, sold those 10 acres and kept the 2-acre home place at 19th Street and Redondo Avenue, and also the 5-acre tract, avocado tract, from running from 20th Street to 21st Street and bounded on the east by Juan Apparel and on the west by Raymond Avenue. We were not able to develop any oil wells for a number of years on that 21st Street 5 acres, but in about 1936 or 37, I forget, I was instrumental in getting a well drilled on the corner of 21st Street and Juan Apparel Avenue, and that well stayed on production about 11 years. My father received no oil royalties from the 10-acre piece of property at Temple and Willow. Three wells were drilled after he sold the property, and they achieved some production, but unfortunately, that was after my father had sold it. The question has been asked, what did Signal Hill look like in those early days? Signal Hill was very quiet, very pastoral in those days prior to the discovery of oil. About the only thing you would hear would be the occasional chug, chug, chug of an automobile as it wound its way around the dusty, dirty roads of the hill proper. There were no paved roads as we now know them in the Signal Hill area. They were dirt roads. They were narrow, frequently very dusty in the summertime, and of course muddy and hard to traverse in the wintertime. The only street which had any paving, and this wasn't done until the early 1920s, was Obispo Avenue from Anaheim Street to State Street. And remember, I have said that State Street later was widened and renamed Pacific Coast Highway. There were the beginnings of a handsome subdivision at the very crest of Signal Hill proper, and stone walls and some street improvements were being made at the top of Signal Hill. One large house had already been built, a beautiful house for its time, which later became headquarters for Shell Oil Company, and this house dominated the entire area. There were few families living on the hill in those days, that is, between 1918 and the discovery of oil. There were the Star family that lived just to the north of us in a large two-story house. They kept cows, chickens, and had a small truck farm. There was Mr. Starr, Mrs. Starr, their sons Perry, Douglas, and Howard, and two daughters named Eleanor and Frances. Just to the west of the Starr house along Grant Avenue were the Brambles. There was Roger Bramble, his sister, whose name I can't recall, and of course Mr. and Mrs. Bramble. A little farther down on Grant Street, still west of the Brambles, lived the Rosenfields. Mr. Rosenfield was an attorney, and he lived there with Mrs. Rosenfield and their young son, Adolph. Just south of Grant Avenue and located on Obispo was the small residence of a Mrs. Davis and her son, Rufus, who was later to become an osteopathic doctor in the city of Long Beach. On the corner of Obispo Avenue and 19th Street, which at that time was called Park Lane, lived Mr. and Mrs. Shackleton, whom I called Uncle Ben and Auntie Shackleton. They lived on a piece of property that my father had sold them in 1919 and had built quite a nice cottage there in the so-called airplane style, which was quite popular at the time. On State Street, now of course Pacific Coast Highway, and Loma Avenue, lived a family called Anspaugh. And it was on this area that I used to have some of my wildest escapades, because there was a large goat farm operated by the Anspaughs at that corner of Loma and State Street. At night, frequently, I and some of the neighbor boys would sneak under the fence of the goat farm and ride the goats to exhaustion, having a jolly good time and coming home reeking of goat odor and covered with goat hairs, much to the consternation and dismay of our hard-worked mothers. Farther up the hill at the intersection of Grant Avenue, now 20th Street, and Temple Avenue, lived a family of Mexicans by the name of Cruz. There was Mr. Cruz, a tall, spare, distinguished-looking Mexican with a bushy gray mustache, ramrod straight back, who farmed a small area of about an acre at his home place. I don't think he owned it. I think that he leased it or rented the land from somebody. In addition to his wife, Mrs. Cruz, they had two daughters, the eldest, Jenny, the next in line, Lottie, short for Charlotte, and Tony, also short for Anthony. I went to Temple Avenue School with all three of the Cruz children, and we remained friends until I was about 17 or 18 years of age, and then we parted ways. I see I'm approaching the end of this tape, and rather than to divide the description of Signal Hill at that time, that is during the years 1918 through 1921, I will continue with a description of Signal Hill on side B of this tape. So if you wish to turn the tape over to side B, there'll be a continuation of the